Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
Good evening and welcome to Sports Day. Adam Papalia, Glenn Jakovich with you this evening. Great to have you company. Another busy, busy day of sport. Plenty to get through on the show tonight, but we want your calls on 9221 882. $50 Bottle-O voucher is up for grabs. Gotta love your local at the Bottle-O. And it's Wednesday wine night. So if you want to have a wine about anything in the world of sport, thanks to Sullivan Logistics, 3 votes for storage and overnight freight. They never say no. Wednesday wine, jump to it, 9221 882. Got Adam Voges coming up on the show. We'll get an update on Mitch Marsh's injury. Trevor Gleeson from the Wildcats, now that they've just been allowed out and back to training today. We'll check in with our Perth Glory W League team, the Perth Heat, and talk some NBA too. There's plenty ahead of us here on Sports Day as I welcome in my co-host tonight in Glenn Jakovich. Jacko, good evening to you.
Hello, Adam, and to all our listeners. Another big day in sport. It rolls on, and we've got plenty ahead of us. I'm looking forward to our guests this evening.
Wednesday wine night, as I said. I'll get your Wednesday wine shortly. But Justin Langer talking today. I'm not sure if it falls into a Wednesday wine. It probably does a little bit because he was whining about some of the treatment or some of the talk that's been around a couple of his players. Let's just hear a little bit of what Justin Langer had to say. Firstly, about the criticisms around Tim Payne.
He's been outstanding as the Australian cap in everything he does. He had a frustrating day. We've got to cut him some slack, surely. But having said that, when you set a standard as high as he does and as we do, we understand when we get criticised when we fall below that. It's not what we're about. But Tim Payne, mate, outstanding leader, and will continue to be for some time to come yet.
So Justin Langer there on Tim Payne, basically defending his character and his captaincy after all of the talk the last couple of days.
Yeah, my wine is the criticism that we as an Australian public hone in on a particular incident. We gave him a slap here and a sledge. We gave him a slap the following night because he called his own press conference and he apologised. He had a bad day. He had a frustrating day and he let his country down, let his teammates down. It is what it is. The criticism and vitriol that's come post that, reference back to South Africa and, you know, bad culture and grub, that just, we need to stop that. They had a bad day, or he had a bad moment, dropped a couple of catches that he should have taken. He swore on national TV. You don't want that. And as I said before, it's probably the second most important seat in Australia. It's the Australian captain behind the Prime Minister. And there's a lot of prestige and honour that comes with it. He fell below the standards by a considerable amount, but he owned it. And back your players, and that's what Justin Langer's done as the Australian coach. Solidarity, that's important. They'll bounce back from it, and if they win the Brisbane Test, they get a number one ranking, and all is forgotten.
He certainly backed in his players today, did Justin Langer. Firstly, Tim Payne, but he also spoke about Steve Smith.
At the crease, he does it probably most games. He's just thinking about the game. Anyone who suggests for 1 millisecond he was trying to do something untoward, way out of line, absolutely out of line. I mean, on that wicket was that flat and it was like concrete. You need 15-inch spikes to make an indent on the crease, and he went nowhere near the crease. So seriously, seriously, mate.
So that was Justin Langer talking about Steve Smith. He's so fired up about it. Look, the Steve Smith one, I don't think anyone really thought he was trying to cheat. I think people initially thought, but that's what it's blown up into, is that they thought he was trying to cheat. I think initially everyone thought he was being a little bit cheeky by just getting rid of the guard of Payne. It wasn't like he was going a couple of steps in front of the crease to where the ball was going to land and was scuffing up the pitch. He was nowhere near doing
it. What people got to understand, that's Steve Smith's craft, isn't it?
Batting.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what was he doing?
Well, shadow batting.
Yeah, that's his craft.
No, I don't think he should have been in that position doing it.
Doesn't matter. He's in his domain. He's in his workplace. He's out there concentrating at the optimum level for when he's going to bat, what he needs to do. He's looking at all the variables. He's staying focused. He's in the game. It may not be a good look, but to suggest that he's digging holes or using 15-inch spikes like Justin Langer said, I'm with Justin Langer. I mean, this is a guy that's one of the best batsmen in the world. Whatever happened over in South Africa has happened. He's worn his medicine, he's copped his right whack, and he served his time. Please. No, no. You get me started on this one. He's going through his craft. That's his craft. He's a professional and he's an elitist. You see the way he goes about it. He's not one of the best batsmen in the world because he takes it for granted.
I don't think he was trying to cheat, but I don't think he should have been practicing his shadow batting right there.
But why
while
not?
India are batting. Why? He doesn't need to do it there.
Well,
stand behind the stumps and do
that's
it.
That's his craft.
Slightly.
It's just like Josh Kennedy, when the ball's at the other end, he's going through and doing leg kicks.
Not in the Hawthorn forward line, he's not, though.
But
that's the different scenario, I think. 9221882. What do the listeners think? Wednesday wine time. The other one is, and we'll get to Alan in just a moment, talking cricket. Perth Glory fans, today, yes. Announcement. New number one ticket holder
awesome.
At the Perth Glory.
Brilliant.
I think it's great,
yeah.
But I just want to know what the Glory fans think, because there is a divide between AFL and the round ball code. And I think that there is a lot of people that that like both, but there's a lot of people that like one or the other and like to put the other one down. And I think a lot of people that support the round ball game of football, that they don't like to give any credit to the AFL.
Yeah,
they don't like to be associated with them at all.
What's going on? Is it a full moon? Is it a full moon? Because
and now there's an AFL captain of a club who's now the number one ticket holder
of
the Perth Glory.
The West Coast Eagles. Who's their number one ticket holder?
You have to tell me.
Sam Kerr.
Yep.
Well, I think... She plays a round ball game.
What I'm saying is, from that way, AFL down, they don't care. But I reckon soccer people will care.
Ah, oh, come on.
I just want to know from the listeners. Maybe I'm wrong. 9221882. I'm just throwing it out there. Wednesday wine night. Alan's in Ellenbrook. G'day, Alan.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Jacko, first, 100% agree with you, mate. But unfortunately, this is what Australian cricket's going to have to deal with for a long time. It's what the West Coast Eagles have to deal with any time Ben Cousins does something. They bring up the past. Any time now Essendon does anything, I can guarantee you the... that whole saga is going to be brought up. It's unfortunately, that's why it was so such a shock with Steve Smith is that, and why he was so upset is I think he knows now for the rest of his career and probably the next 25 years of the Australian cricket team, it's what we're going to have to deal with. Because, I mean, Ben Cousins hasn't been playing for the Eagles for a long time, but any time anything happens to him or any time something gets brought up, we straight away, the media over East or whoever it is on Facebook or the trolls, straight away jump on 05, 06, what was happening at the club then. Essendon, you know, the whole drama there was years ago, but that still gets brought up every time there's a mention of an Essendon player doing slightly well at something. It must be the peptides. And unfortunately for Steve Smith and for the Australian cricket team, I think we've got a couple of decades of this to go.
Yeah, it's a good call and great summation. Thanks, Alan, for calling in. And that's the landmark. I mean, you got to be thick-skinned. For Steve Smith, he's got a target on his back now because he's such an elitist and he's one of the great batsmen when he gets going. And I think more so he draws a lot of attention with his quirkiness where he's, you know, he's got the Rafael Nadal where he hits his pads, touches his pad
yep.
after the same shot each time he faces a ball. And, you know, people are really glued to him. The media love scrutinising him because he either's going to score a ton and it's going to be magnificent, or then he gets three innings where he only scores 20 or 30 and gets a duck, then he's in bad form, you know. So
unfortunately, it is going to be the case, though. Because of what's happened in the past, everything always gets referenced. And I'm not saying that he was cheating in this position, but it will get brought up if you go anywhere near those areas again. And unfortunately, people have got long memories.
Yeah, and that's
not saying
the thing.
It's right, but that's the way it is, and they should understand that as well.
So is that a poor Australian culture?
I don't think it's just Australian culture. I think that's everyone, isn't it?
But we're in Australia.
We are.
Yeah.
But it's the same. It hasn't been Australians jumping on that one. 9221882. Sam's in Churchlands. G'day, Sam.
G'day. How you doing? Yeah, I'll agree with the previous caller, just in the sense that Australia's got a very, very low margin of error or margin of safety before they attract any criticism, and that's been built up through, you know, years of other practices they were doing. So to me, that explains why things blow up with something like Steve Smith. The reality is, I agree, he should just don't be there, and then you don't attract the criticism. But ultimately, he didn't do a hell of a lot wrong there. However, but what I will say is that, one, you talk about thick skin before, Glenn. One, the Indian team have the thinnest skin in the world. And the reality is that Indian, or BCCI, controls world cricket with the amount of money that they generate. So there's a surprising, unsurprising lack of media around how someone can be too injured to wicketkeeper, then manages to bat for, you know, half a day, and bending the rules to play 12 players. Now, if we're talking about cheating, that's far, there's far more gravity in that than what Steve Smith did. And in terms of the abuse, there's a lot of unevidence that's coming up in relation to the fact that there wasn't a lot said, and that's come from quite a few people in the crowd. And it just seems that their complaints about racial abuse was very well timed towards slowing two batsmen up and an impending declaration.
Well, we're still waiting to hear, Sam, what does come out of that investigation. Thanks for your call.
Valid points. Well done, Sam. Thanks for your call, and very good points that he makes. But it's going to be interesting. We're waiting for the pending results of that. If you correct me if I'm wrong here, the man of the match of the third test was Steve Smith.
Yep. Mm. He was.
Because he works on his craft. He's on top of his game.
I don't mind him working on his craft. Yeah. He just shouldn't be standing at the crease when he does
that's
it.
That's his business.
While the other team...
He can do it wherever he wants.
When he's batting, go for it. When the other team's doing it, don't think you need to be there.
It's just like sitting in the slips. You're just practicing catches with an imaginary ball.
Do it in the slips, not where someone else is batting. 9221 882. You just open yourself up for criticism, especially with what everything else has gone on. Wednesday, why night? Sullivan Logistics, 3 votes for storage and overnight freight. They never say no. Adam Voges joins us next.
Well, thanks for your company on Sports Day this evening. Been a busy show so far, and let's get to our next guest. Our news headlines, thanks to Car Sales, number one for cars, is the coach of the Perth Scorchers, who's a regular here on the program, in Adam Voges, who joins us on the line now. Adam, thanks so much for your time. Was that the perfect performance yesterday?
Yeah, it was certainly a clinical performance. I was really pleased with the way that the boys went about it. Set up, obviously, with our bowlers. I thought Jai Richardson, Jason Berendorf up front were outstanding yet again, and really nicely backed up by Aaron Hardy. I thought Fawad Ahmed bowled really nicely, and AJ Tai did a good job as well. So, to restrict Hobart to 140, we always thought was a little bit under par. And then, obviously, to see our two Englishmen get the job done. I think we've been waiting for a performance like that, and it was really nice of them to put on a show for the home fans last night.
That they did. There's some creative shot selection and some really big hitting, which was great. As you said, we've been waiting a little bit for those two Englishmen to really show the fireworks that they've got, but they were sublime.
Yeah, they were, and they're both fantastic players, and we always felt that it was only a matter of time before a performance like this was coming, and thankfully it came last night, and I'm sure both of them will take a huge amount of confidence out of that as we head over east, and they're going to be really important on the wickets, which are a little bit lower and slower than what we've had at Optus, and getting off to a good start with the bats obviously going to be crucial. So for those guys to be full of confidence to jump on the plane tomorrow, I think it's a really good thing.
G'day, Adam. Glenn Jakovich, thanks for joining us here this evening. Those shorter targets of 140, can they sometimes be a little bit tricky for your batsmen or your team to get their head around?
It can be, yeah, no doubt. They can be tricky little chases, and often you work it out very quickly in the first five or six overs which way it's going to go. And thankfully, they got through that tricky little period. I thought Riley Meredith bowled with some really good pace and troubled them at times, but they got through that. They got a bit settled, and after that, I thought that the partnership developed beautifully and was in control from the halfway mark, really.
Going back to the bowling performance, how well do you believe Jai Richardson is bowling right now?
I sang his praises after the last game as well, and he's going from strength to strength. Come back from that shoulder surgery that he had at the beginning of the summer, and he hasn't missed a beat since he's come back, and he's been phenomenal. Not only is he the leading wicket taker, but his economy rate's been outstanding. I think he only conceded 2 runs in his first 2 overs. I think there was a wicket made in there as well. So the way he's leading our attack is sensational. Reminds me of Mitchell Johnson and the way he went about it a few years ago, the way that he's just setting the tone for us up front. And he's been outstanding, and fingers crossed there's a bit more to come yet as well.
Do you think he's on track for higher honours?
Oh, no doubt. There's obviously a test tour to South Africa and a one-day tour to New Zealand. So I imagine he's on one of those trips post the Big Bash. Which one it is, I'm sure he doesn't mind. That'll probably be the toughest choice for the selectors as to which tour to take him on. But no, he's going beautifully, and I'm sure he's not far away from representing Australia again.
And you think if he was selected for the a test squad that he's got what it takes, and he's bowling better now than he ever has?
Oh, look, certainly from what we've seen in the white ball, he hasn't had a chance to get the red ball in his hand just yet, but I think we've seen in previous seasons how skillful Jai is with the red ball in his hand as well. Made a successful test debut a year or so ago, and I know he's certainly in the selectors' eyes for test call-up, but the way he's going in white ball cricket, he's putting his hand up in all forms of the game, so I've got no doubt that he'll be ready to go, whichever format they choose him in. Just like him to take a few more wickets for us first.
Absolutely. Jason Berendorf's another one who's come back from injury and is performing so well. I mean, he's been through so much over the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's right. It was 18 months ago that he had that major back surgery, which has hopefully prolonged his career. And I guess when you have such major surgery, there's no guarantees that you can get back to that same level. So really pleasing for Jason that he's been able to not only get back on the park, but I think he's getting better with every hit out as well. And alongside Jai, I think they're forming a really formidable new ball partnership, and they're having a massive say and massive impact on the games, because those early wickets are just so crucial, regardless of whether we bat or bowl first, to be able to knock over the opposition's better players at the top has been crucial to our recent success.
Adam, what's the update on Mitch Marsh?
Yeah, he had scans today, and those scans show that there's a bit of damage there, which we fully expected to see. So, look, from a bowling perspective, I don't think we'll see him again this tournament, which is a shame. But we're certainly hopeful that by the end of the tournament, we've got Mitch back as a batter in some capacity. So, exact time frames I can't really give you at this stage, but he'll start his rehab straight away. And, yeah, we're certainly hopeful that before the end of this tournament, we'll see him back out there for us.
Do you know exactly what the injury was? And as you said, so you can't give me a timeline on, you don't think, you know, if it'll be a week or two or three?
It'll be one of them. yeah, look, there's a bit of damage. It's a left side strain, which was evident at the time that he did it. So it'll literally be how he feels and how quickly we can progress him over the next little period. I imagine he'll certainly miss our next couple of games, but again, it'll determine how he wakes up each morning, how much work we can get into him. He'll be on the plane with us to Canberra tomorrow. So our medical team is brilliant, and they'll do everything they can to get him up and get him back on the park as soon as possible.
Frustrating for the coach, because he was just starting to make some runs, but particularly for Mitch as well. He just made his way back from that ankle injury and, as I said, was getting into some form and having a really solid impact for the team.
Yeah, he hasn't had a lot of luck, unfortunately. And, unfortunately for us, these things never run as smoothly as you'd like them to, but look, it's part of the game. Injury's part of the game. I think most teams are dealing with it in some form at the moment. And we are no different to that. So, like I said, our medical team has been brilliant so far to keep the guys mainly fit throughout the tournament. We're certainly hopeful that Colin Munro will be fit and available for our next game. So there could be a straight swap there. And it's not a bad replacement, albeit that we'll certainly miss Mitch.
You preempted my next question. So Colin Munro, it was just a very slight, was it a quad strain for him, and he's right to go?
Yeah, very slight. And if that was a grand final the other night, I'm pretty sure he would have played. So we took the slightly more conservative route with him, knowing that we've still got five more games to go. So, look, he rocked up game day and said, I'm ready to go. So unfortunately, we'd taken him out of the squad, so we couldn't pick him. But he's done some good work. We'll fitness test him over in Canberra just to make sure that he's ready to go, but certainly confident that he'll be ready. He'll be right for the Sixers game on Saturday.
Optus Stadium, certainly good for you, having won all of your matches here. Now you head away again, not to where you were originally scheduled to go. You're heading to Canberra. Are you disappointed you couldn't get a few more matches here in Perth?
Oh, of course.
Especially after the fixture changes and not being to go where you were initially meant to.
No doubt. I think that the way that these run of games has gone, the wicket's been an absolute belter at Optus. We've seen high scoring games, entertaining games, and we've got great crowds. We had another 23,000 there last night. The Perth fans have come out in force, and I think it's a real shame that we've got a stadium, a world-class stadium sitting there that won't get used at the back end of the tournament. So, yeah, look, we'd certainly love to play more games at Optus. I think we're starting to slowly work out how to play there, and that's been probably the most pleasing bit over the last four games is the consistency and the way that we've gone about our cricket. But, yeah, for our members and fans, we'd certainly love to be playing more games there. And, we'd welcome it. I'm not sure it's going to happen, but, it's a shame that we've got a stadium sitting there and we're not going to be able to use it.
Your first stretch away from home wasn't great. What do you do differently now that you travel away again to try and keep this run of results going?
Yeah, I don't think too much changes. I think we've obviously found some nice momentum and a lot of confidence as well within certain individuals, but as the group as a whole. So I think we ride that momentum as long as we possibly can. We had a really good game against the Sixers at Optus, and we'll be confident going into that clash at Manuka, albeit in slightly different conditions, and we may need to slightly change the way that we play, but the fundamentals and the partnerships that we've created with the bat and the pressure that we've been able to apply with the ball, that doesn't change regardless of where you play. But our ability to adapt to those conditions is going to be really important. But again, like I said, that confidence and momentum that we'll take with us will certainly be key to that.
So you head away now, Canberra, then you're heading to Melbourne. What does that mean in the long run? Are you staring down the barrel of another quarantine with the way the border situation is?
I think so. I think depending on the border situation, we're fully understanding that the minute we set foot in Victoria that there's every chance we'll need to do home quarantine when we do come home. So I think we've said all along since the start of the summer that we'll do what we need to in terms of making the tournament and the summer go ahead. And again, this is just another one of those sacrifices that we may need to make. And it's unfortunate. It'll be our second stint of quarantine if we do get it, albeit it'll be at home. So it is what it is. Look, hopefully we can play some good cricket and get potentially a final back in Perth. But, we'll deal with that when it arrives. And, we try not to look too far ahead and just concentrate on what's coming up.
So that's your understanding, if you do qualify for a final, that you'd hopefully play it here?
We're actually unsure of where our final fixture against the Heat will be and any potential finals. So we haven't got absolute clarity on that yet. So we're just waiting to see. So probably clarity more so on our last game would be nice to know. And then any potential finals, we'll certainly worry about winning some more games of cricket first before we worry about that.
Of course. But if you keep playing the way you are, you'll certainly be putting yourself in the frame. Adam, as always, thanks so much for your time here on Sports Day. Really appreciate it. Good luck with this next stretch of games away.
Thanks, Paps. Cheers, bud.
Adam Voge is there, the coach of the Perth Scorchers, and we certainly do wish them well as they head off and get towards the back end of the tournament. Our news headlines there. Thanks to Car Sales. A car sells every 30 seconds on...
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
Great to have your company on the show, Adam Papalia and Glenn Jakovic with you here on the program. Just a cricket update, thanks to Maccas. The McRib and El Macco are back at Maccas this summer. And in the Big Bash, it's the Sydney Thunder and the Sydney Sixers, which is a little bit weird because it's been played on neutral territory tonight. But none for 35. The Sydney Sixers are a target of 129 on the Duckworth-Lewis method because they have had a fair bit of rain about there. But none for 35 they are off 2.4 overs at this stage after the Thunder were 6 for 166, I think they were. Jacko, a little bit earlier on. So a cricket update there, thanks to Maccas. The saucy McRib and legendary El Macco are back at Maccas this summer for a limited time only. Jacko, Ken Hinckley extended today. Obviously in a good position at the power. It just takes the pressure off a little bit, I guess, if they have a few stumbling blocks in the early part of the season.
Well, you want certainty.
If you know he's going to be there, they just lock him in.
And the players want certainty, and they'll kick from a grand final last year, so the pressure's on now. He's got 2 years to win a grand final, and they're in the box seat. They've got a very good list. They've got a strong list. They just got to put it all together now, the Port Adelaide Power.
They'll be
back up there, you'd think, this season, whether they can go all the way or not. So we're not sure. We'll talk about the Power over the next little while as we continue our AFL season previews. We'll talk about the Saints and the Eagles a little bit later on in this program. Speaking of West Coast, AFL Life Membership's announced today, which will be officially ratified a little bit later on in the year, but Shannon Hearn gets Life Membership today, which is great, and obviously 300 games, the qualifying point to get AFL Life Membership.
Yes, as a player, and they do have administrators and umpires that are eligible, and anyone that's contributed to the game over a long period of time. So Shannon Hearn's been a warrior, and he's been a very, very good player, elite player over a long period of time. So he'll be welcomed into the AFL Life member group, and it's an illustrious group, and it's a great day on Grand Final Day. You have a pretty good day, Paps.
Certainly, of course, you're in that club. As you mentioned, 286 games for the Eagles, Shannon Hearn, 22 preseason games as well. So it's the representative games, preseason games, international rules games in your
state of origin for myself. Yeah, so it's a combination of your total games played at the highest level.
The other players to go in, Travis Boak, Matthew Clark, Tom Hawkins, Ken Hinckley, who we were speaking about before, Mark Murphy, Jack Riewoldt, Harry Taylor, Justin Westhoff, and then some service qualifications, Emmett Dunn, Shane O'Sullivan and Darren Wilson as well. This is Sports Day, back with Trevor Gleeson, the Perth Wildcats coach, next.
Well, thanks for your company on Sports Day. Adam Papalia and Glenn Jakovic with you. Jacko, we've been following very, very closely over the couple of weeks the issues surrounding the Perth Wildcats with the quarantine that they've had to now go into after travelling away for a pre-season game. Their opening season fixtures have changed a number of times, but there is some hope on the horizon. They got out today and had a training session, and their coach in Trevor Gleeson joins us on the line now. Trevor, thanks so much for your time. When did you get the exemption to be able to get out of the house and get down to training?
Yeah, probably about 7 o'clock last night it got approved. So, yeah, it's our, you know, we haven't been able to train for the last week. I think we've had one session training during the last week, so which is not ideal, but it was just great to get out to the guys back on court this morning.
So how does it work from a logistics point of view for you all actually to converge on the Bendat Basketball Centre to get a training session away?
Yeah, there's a lot of protocols in there. We leave home, they've got to wear a face mask and in the car and straight to Bendat Basketball Centre. There's a cordon off area that we have to park and cordon off area we have to enter. There's half the stadium is out of bounds for us. So, yeah, and we have to be out a certain time so the cleaners can come in and give it a deep clean. So a lot of protocols that we're ticking off, but we're just thankful we can get on the court.
Trevor, with so many protocols and measurements put in place, how's the players' training performances? How do you assess that as a coach, knowing that they've got other aspects on their mind?
Yeah, it was really hard today because, like I said, this is our first fully practice that we could in a week. We played last Wednesday and then we got locked down in Brisbane. So there was 3 days in Brisbane where we were just locked down and couldn't even leave the hotel. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that you have to juggle around, and you want to make sure your mind is clear while you're in practice, that you're not worried about other things, and, you know, and that's when injuries come and can be a concern. So, you know, we're very lucky. We've got some guys that have been very good through this period and through last year, the period, and we'll draw on that experience to get us through this little section.
Have you dealt with it personally, all the uncertainty, I guess, with what unfolded late last week to come back and then to be in isolation for the last couple of days, unsure whether you could train or what was going to happen with the season creeping closer? Have you been pacing around the living room? How have you been feeling waiting for it all to play out?
Yeah, it's been frustrating because you build up all the time for the season, then you get your start, then you have your full training and then you taper and get ready for that first game. And, you know, this has kind of been derailed. So this week we wanted a good hard week of practice and then lighten up next week. So, yeah, it's been a juggling course so far. And, you know, first and foremost is the guys being mentally strong and mentally get through this period. And hopefully that can help us down the stretch.
Trevor, earlier on the week, Jesse Wagstaff was confirmed as the club's captain going to season 2021. Tell us his style of leadership and what's the difference between, I guess, his style and Damien Martin, who retired last year.
Yeah, well, Jesse's been involved in the leadership for a long period of time, even though he wasn't captain, but he certainly had the senior voice in the group, and he has the locker room voice. So, you know, that's always important, even though that you may be not captain. But Jesse's, you know, Jesse's style is a bit more one-on-one. He'll pull a guy aside and have a word to him, if you know, if help him out and put him in the right direction. And, you know, Damo was such an inspirational how he played. He just inspired you to play harder and faster and better on the court. And Jesse's more of a cool head out on the court. So different styles, but, you know, both are highly effective.
What will Jesse's role in the team be? Do you expect him to be a starter this season or coming off the bench? And does that matter if you're the captain?
No, it really doesn't. The captain's more so in the locker room and outside of the court, and make sure we're following our behaviours and our values and paying attention to those things. And on the court, it's really the five guys are playing best together. And Jesse's, you know, Jesse for a number of years has been coming off the bench, but we normally finish the game with Jesse because we want that extra shooter with Bryce on the floor and creates opportunities out there. So, yeah, we're just juggling that up at the moment, and we'll come to a good conclusion next week.
Trevor, you're just 11 days away from your first game, South East Melbourne on the 24th. How are you preparing for them? And tell us what do you expect to get from them from the first game of the season?
Yeah, well, they're recruited really well. They got Glidden over there, a WA boy that was in Brisbane the year before, and Mitch Creek is their franchise player. So they've done really well with their recruiting, and be interesting to see how they go. We can sit back here and watch their first couple of games and get a good read on them. But, you know, right now we're just focused and locked in on ourselves. And as we get closer to that game on the 24th, we'll really lock into Phoenix.
Well, Trevor, really appreciate your time. I'm glad that you can get out and about and get into training. All the best with the rest of the isolation period as well, but we're all looking forward to that first match on the 24th, of course, here at RAC Arena. Thanks for your time, Trev.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for your company on Sports Day. Adam Papalia, Glenn Jakovich with you. Sports Day, of course, a great partner of the Western Force. And you can join the Western Force in Super Rugby this year. 7 home game memberships are on sale right now. Make sure you get involved. But, Jacko, we're doing our AFL season previews while we are on the show over these last couple of weeks and working our way through the teams in reverse ladder order. And now we head to the Saints.
I like the Saints, Adam, and I like singing their song as well. Finished sixth last year, 10 wins, 7 losses. They were fourth in scoring, which is really positive, ninth in defence. Their fixtures is GWS away, tough one. Then they've got 4 in a row at Marvel, including Melbourne, Essendon, West Coast, Richmond, and then Port Adelaide away. I categorise the first six because we start to get an idea where sides are heading in the year, who's got off to a good start and who's really struggling. Starts to shape the top eight for the remainder of the year. They've recruited really well in the off-season with, I like Jack Higgins coming in, more goal-kicking power. They're fourth on the list from last year. James Frawley will give him that experience down back. Brad Crouch is the big signing for them to add to and bolster that midfield that's already starting to look dangerous. And Sean McKernan, he's a bit of an insurance policy, but their rucks combination of Rowan Marshall goes forward and kicks a goal. Paddy Ryder, I thought, had one of his better seasons last year when the Saints got going. Unfortunately, had that injury leading into the final. He kicks goals as well. Goal-kicking ruckmen are very rare, and if you've got them, they're very valuable to your football club. Seb Ross, Brad Hill, Jack Steele, Dan Hennebury, Premiership player, Jack Billings, Luke Dunson, Jade Gresham. That is very, very good midfield. Good core group of players that have played together for a period of time. Some experiences come in. Premiership players, grand finalists in Brad Crouch. Their defenders are pretty solid with Hunter Clark, who's an elite ball user, and in confined spaces, he gets himself out of trouble. And then they go on the slingshot, get it out to Bradley Hill and run and get that ball into their forward line. Max King, well, there's high wraps on this kid. Takes great contested marks. Just got to tweak up his, obviously, his goal-kicking accuracy, but that'll be a work in progress. There's no doubting that. Dan Butler, who was very unlucky not to be All-Australian. Tim Embry, it's going to be an interesting one. If he can really combine well and play probably second fiddle, I guess, to Max King next year, it'll help his footy and enable him to probably get the second or third best defender, as opposed to previous years he's been getting the best defender. I'm really looking forward to see how they readjust that. But the thing with the Saints, I've got them playing finals football again. He's got them building really, really well. This list is building towards playing sustained finals and having a crack at premiership in years to come. And that could be very, very soon in the next 1 or 2 to 3 years. And that's what Saints fans would be hoping for. But last year, they still had the best of their games and their worst. The gap was still sometimes too great for my liking. And they lost to West Coast. They should have won that game. They didn't know how to win when they were in a winning position. Lost to Fremantle after, you know, having a solid first quarter. On a day game out at Metricon. So they've got to tidy that up. And that's just a little bit of maturity. But their ruck stocks are very, very good. I like Marshall going forward. He's big, strong, powerful. They're good on ground level. And their midfielders are quite elite. So where they play Bradley Hill is going to be interesting. There was a few times he got criticised last year and they weren't using him enough. He's an outside player. He's not an inside footballer. But when he gets and goes with the football, he breaks lines and gives their forwards first use. And when you've got Max King and Tim Membre leading at you, they're going to look the good to the Saints. I've got them finishing above six. I've got them fifth or fourth around that area. Tough start in the draw if they can get over that draw early. But their home ground is Marvel. They've got to own that, and they've got to make that a fortress, just like any other home team has their home ground. Win more there, then they'll play finals football.
And if that group of players that you mentioned in amongst that age group that have been there for a few years can take a really big step, and you don't know what the ceiling is on the Saints.
And that's the thing about the Saints last year. When they got their momentum running, I just felt they held it really strong internally together, and that's led by Brett Ratten. He's been part of premierships. He's been part of successful culture from Carlton days, obviously when he went to Hawthorn. So he knows how to control the players' expectations, and momentum is really, really important, and not get ahead of yourselves. He's a very good coach. He's very humble. I think he wants to coach his players to play in that manner as well. I like the Saints. There's something about them that I'm really looking forward to their next 2 or 3, 4 years, and hopefully more for St Kilda supporters, because it's been lean for them over a long period of time. But I think they're finally getting their list right. They've just got to build one or two more players. I'd like another good defender in there, running back that can really use the ball well to assist Hunter Clark. Dylan Robertson for me is an interesting one. If they can get him up and going, I like him. He's a tall, moves well, good on ground level, makes good decisions under pressure. And that's what you want. James Frawley, a bit of insurance policy for him as well, but led by Jake Carlisle, who's really settled into that back line well since leaving, under controversial circumstances, leaving Essendon, but he's certainly matured. And Dougal Howard, another good defender. So they've got good A-graders on all three facets, from the defence, midfield and forward line. And we've got some up-and-coming superstars that we're going to grace the TVs for many performances to come.
Yeah, they will be exciting. The Dylan Robertson one's an interesting one, as you said, taking a step away from the club. But if they can keep him there and get him playing his best footy, his best is very, very good, and would certainly complement that side. Glenn Jakovich's thoughts there on St Kilda in season 2021. We'll come back. We'll talk West Coast season preview in the next hour as well. We'll check in with our Perth Glory W League team. We'll talk some NBA, Perth Heat. It's all coming up right here on Sports Day. But right now it's time for the 7 o'clock news. Well, welcome back to Sports Day. Adam Papalia and Glenn Jakovich with you. Of course, as always, you can give us a buzz on 9221 882. Our caller of the night puts themselves in the running for the $50 Bottle-O voucher. Gotta love your local at the Bottle-O. And Jacko, we've been rolling through our season previews of all the teams. We spoke St Kilda a little bit earlier on in the program as we go in reverse ladder order, which means we hit your old club next, who we spoke about a little bit with Adam Simpson last night. But yes, want to expand more on exactly where you think West Coast are headed in season 2021, and more specifically, what really needs to go right for them to, one, make it to the top four, and two, contend for a premiership, which everyone is expecting that they need to do this year,
before their window closes.
Yeah, there's always a prerequisite for all contending teams. One, a healthy list, a good start, so you bank the wins early. You know, you get a good run of your senior players playing regularly, week in, week out. So you're only changing between 24, 25 players. So the core group are playing week to week. And your coaching staff can really put a good, solid game plan and you get your momentum going. I mean, you look at Richmond the last couple of years, they've had hardly any injuries and they've kept that main group there. So last year, West Coast fifth, 12 wins, 5 losses. In comes Alex Witherden and Zach Langdon. I like the ins. I think that's a bargain for both trades that came in, especially Alex Witherden. I think was pick 63 for West Coast. He was a first rounder a couple of years ago and in the National Academy program, an elite kick. And in this today's day and age, you need elite kicks that can pull the trigger on the 45 when you're going through the corridor. Off the half back, he'll be looking a suitable replacement for Shannon Hearn one day. Look, the list is still very, very strong. They're a contender. They're going to be right up there. Elliot Yeo is a big one, and I wouldn't mind the fact if he delays his start by 2 or 3 weeks, but you get the back end of the year of him playing his optimum footy and replicate the best and fairest years of that form that he showed during those years, especially in the premiership year. Their back line is solid. Tom Barras, Jeremy McGovern, and Brad Shepherd, all Australian last year. Shannon Hearn's going to be an interesting one. It's looking the goods, but it's only January. It's a long season. He has played up to nearly 300 league games. AFL Life member, congratulations, well done. But where I'm looking at is the next generation to step up. I like Josh Rotham. I think he's been a little bit unlucky a few times to be left out of the side. For West Coast to win it, they need the pressure from the 24th player right up to the 28th, 29th, 30th, playing really well in their reserve side and putting pressure on the fringe players that are getting the game. From a week-to-week basis. Jared Brander, Jake Waterman, Oscar Allen, I believe they're ready to take the next step. They're all going into their fourth season. They've played 40, 50 league games of football. They've played some finals, and they've played in a very, very good team. So it also depends on Nick Nat replicating the All-Australian year that he had last year. If he can continue to do that, he's certainly going to put their side in a very good position. Nathan Vardy, for me, he needs a support unit, Nick Nat. Is it going to be Bailey Williams that stands up and gets more opportunities? I'd like to see Nathan Vardy. I think he's a goal-kicking ruckman, and we saw that when he did play in 2018. But scoring...
Just on the ruck situation, Adam Simpson spoke about it last night. With the increasing game time and going back to longer format games, they might have to be forced to play two ruckmen as opposed to having Oscar Allen pinch hit.
I think they're going to need to do that, given Nick Nat into his 30s now. He's a big-bodied. They've got to try and get another 1 or 2 years of Nick Nat's form of last season, All-Australian, being so dominant. And with that prime midfield, Luke Shuey, Elliot Yeo, Tim Kelly, Dom Sheed and Andrew Gaff running in through there as well as Jack Redden, there's a lot of A-graders there. There's best and fairest. There's a Norm Smith medalist there. There's all Australians in there. Tim Kelly, as we spoke last night, I think he's only 25 years of age. Adam Simpson said that he had an indifferent year, but he showed the glimpses in the back end of the year when they got that run of wins in the second hub. He's their barometer. If he can win the ball, and you've got Shuey dominating as well, you can't stop all of them. And then it goes into that forward line. My concern for him in the forward line, they just need another Liam Ryan, and that's Willy Rioli. We don't know the scenario, what's going to happen to Willy. I doubt he's going to play any football in 2021 once the decision comes through. So does that give an opportunity for Zach Langdon? Obviously, he was an insurance, a little bit of an insurance policy, but I'm being a bit more respectful than that. I think he can play and hold his own position. So they're going to need the goals. Can Josh Kennedy have another year of kicking 40 to 50 goals a year? If him and Jack Darling can have that two-pronged attack, then Liam Ryan to the side. Jamie Cripps, he missed one of the hubs because last year I think his wife gave birth to a baby. If he can have a season like he had in 2018, then they get their scoring up. West Coast scoring has slipped the last couple of years. When they won their premiership, it was fifth in the competition. Last year it was seventh. So it slipped by two positions, but they missed fourth spot by a game. So the game is about inches. And you need, for West Coast to win it, Adam, they need to finish top four and above.
certainly do. They've missed it the last couple of years. And
only just two.
And only just on it by percentage on a couple of them.
Yep.
The issue for West Coast seems to be their forward pressure and being able to retain the ball inside their forward 50. They dominate out of the middle. They get a lot of scores out of the side of the centre square. But being able to lock it in and having that pressure in their inside 50s is an issue. So Zach Langdon may help that a little bit, but I guess that's a whole team effort, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess when you had Willie and Liam Ryan running right, defenders are more worried about being on placards for the rest of their lives. They're going to take mark of the year, or they're going to get shown candy all around that forward line area. So West Coast have always had good inside 50 entries with a mark resulting straight away. Fast ball movement through the middle of the ground, Nick Nat to Shuey or Yo, bang straight to Kennedy Darling. You got Cripps or you got Liam Ryan at the fall of the ball. That's their go. And they score quickly, heavily. So they depend on that. Yeah, forward line pressure is good, but they don't want to be locking it in there. They want to be scoring immediately because they've got the defenders on the back foot.
Where do you see them finishing?
I've got them fourth.
Can they win the premiership?
Yes, they can, but they need a lot of things to go their way early in the season. And Elliot Yeo is a big player, getting his fitness right. But the support unit for Nick Nat is very important. With the extended game times, can he replicate that same year as he did last year in his All-Australian year? Nathan Vardy's the big one for me, or a Bailey Williams stands up. But some players need to jump out of the box. Like I mentioned before, Jared Brander gets an opportunity. Oscar Allen, Jake Waterman have to take the next step now. They've been in the system for 3 or 4 years. That's where the next generation's going to come through to enable the senior guys to hang on to play in a grand final.
Is this their last crack at it in this window with their list?
They got 1 to 2 years left with this list.
Glenn Jakovich, thoughts there on the West Coast Eagles heading into season 2021. If you've got any thoughts on that, 9221882 is the phone number. Jacko, thank you very much for your company tonight. Early relief of duties tonight because it's your daughter's birthday.
Thanks very much, Adam, and to all our listeners tonight. Much appreciated. And to my daughter, Anique, happy birthday. I'll be home in about 10 minutes.
Glenn Jakovich there on his way out the door in joy. The birthday celebrations, a happy birthday, of course. 9221882 is the phone number. We'll come back. We're still about to chat with a couple of our local teams. Perth Glory women in action tomorrow. Perth Heat as well. Get an update on them. We'll be talking some NBA as well, all here on Sports Day. Well, thanks for your company on Sports Day. Adam Papalia with you through until 8 o'clock tonight. And our Perth Glory women's team kicked off their season on the weekend, unfortunately going down to Adelaide United in a pretty tough clash, a controversial late penalty awarded, of course, as well. But they went down 1-0. They've got the return leg against Adelaide United tomorrow, and certainly looking forward to that. And Mariana Tabane from the Perth Glory W League team joins me on the line now. Mariana, thank you so much for your time.
No worries. Thanks for having me on.
It must have been great to finally get out there. Of course, the fixtures had moved around a couple of times, but to get through the first hit out over there in Adelaide.
Yeah, it was nice. Definitely nice to get the first game out of the way. Obviously not the result that we wanted, but it was just nice to get those minutes into the legs and actually just play the first hit out that we've been waiting for.
Talk us through the match a little more.
I think that we're, as a group, we were all quite nervous. We've obviously had a few schedule changes, so that's added to the pressure a little bit. But I think before the game, we've got quite a young squad, so I'd say a few of the girls were quite nervous. And we went out there and we tried to implement the game plan. I don't think that we did it as best as we could have. But in saying that, we're really excited about tomorrow's game, and hopefully we can go out there and get a little bit of revenge.
Some revenge would be good. What do you think about the penalty?
Ooh. If you want my personal opinion, I don't think it was a penalty, but let's not get into that.
Well, I'll add for a little bit of fireworks, I guess, or as you said, you're chasing some revenge for tomorrow, so it should make for a good contest.
Yeah, hopefully. I think a few of the girls were a little bit annoyed about it, so it'll add to the fire and it'll hopefully make us play a little bit harder.
You mentioned how young the squad is. There's some young stars, obviously, coming through. Can you talk us through the dynamic in the team and how long do you think it's going to take you to really gel?
I think, in a way, we were lucky that we did have a few fixture changes. It obviously gave us a few more weeks to band together and gel a little bit more than the other teams. But I think that at the moment we've got quite a good mix of young and old, myself being an older one, feeling it in the body a little bit during sessions. But no, I think we've got some really good talent coming through. I think just it's exciting that the girls get To play each week, and hopefully we'll be able to get results as we go.
The age reference was your words, not mine, but you are one of the leaders, I guess, on that side in the squad. You enjoy that side of things and being able to impart your knowledge from a great career so far on them?
Yeah, I think for me personally it's good because I've always been quite young, so I've always been one of the younger players. But you've got a lot of players coming through that are, I guess, looking to a lot of the younger players for knowledge to share and all those kinds of things. So for me personally, I think it's a bit of a different year, but I'm enjoying the challenge and I'm hoping to, yeah, add to their knowledge and just share with them what I can.
You've had a couple of different stints at Perth Glory through your career, been to Melbourne City, of course, as well, and to Croatia most recently before coming back to the Glory. Can you talk us through your return again to Perth?
Oh, it's exciting. I thought, yeah, just knowing that Alex Epicus was going to be stepping in and, you know, there's a few changes in the staff and there's still a lot of the same girls that I played with many, many years ago. I thought for me it was personally a good time to come back. I know last year I just wanted to, had my eyes on Europe and wanted to go and get that out of my system a little bit. So really happy to be home and happy to be in purple.
What was it like playing over there in Europe?
Oh, it was awesome. It was, yeah, a really good experience. I mean, you go to a cafe and there's, you know, old men there talking about football and reading the paper. Everything's just football. So it was very different. There was no AFL to be seen, which I did like. No, but it was awesome. It was really good.
Well, you can't say that. The number one ticket holder of the Perth Glory is now an AFL person. We've been talking about that on the show. How do you feel about it? You've got to give us the right answer, I guess.
I can't go back on my word now, can I?
So you're okay with Steve Cadelio being the number one ticket holder?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I think it's good that obviously you've got both codes now. So it's exciting for the club. And, yeah, he's an awesome athlete, so it's really good news.
Great stuff. So tomorrow night, obviously, against Adelaide, as you said, you would have learned a bit out of the first match. And, of course, getting a home game here should hopefully lead to a different result.
Oh, we're hoping so. We hit the track running straight away after the loss. Obviously, we're disappointed, but we're hoping to execute the game plan a little bit better this week. Alex will change a few things and we'll just adapt. And we're hoping to, yeah, get the result and play a little bit, play the ball on the ground and just get the ball moving.
Well, great to have a chat to you, Mariana. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's check in now with our Perth Heat. We had a caller the other night on Sports Day wondering exactly what was going on. We spoke to them before the season started, and since then a lot really has unfolded. And Steve Nilkowski, their general manager, joins us on the line now. Steve, great to have a chat to you, mate. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Pat. It's good to be on the show.
Talk us through the season for you, trying to sort out all the logistics of the team. I imagine it's been pretty hectic.
Yeah, we've had a few changes. Started on the opening day of the series when Canberra refused to come over to Perth. So we were scheduled to start at home on December 18, and Canberra never boarded their flight on that morning, which made it tricky. Luckily, we managed to get an exhibition series up for that weekend and get some valuable game time into our players. But then, yeah, the trip to Melbourne was complicated by the outbreak of COVID-19. We went up to Queensland. They had the outbreak on Friday. So then we chartered a flight to Adelaide, and now we're in a hub in South Australia along with the Giants and Brisbane Bandits. So there's three teams in there. And all going well, we'll be back in Perth on January 23 and playing Adelaide that night.
How's the team going? I mean, baseballers overseas are kind of used to doing those long stints and playing lots of fixtures away and being in a hub type scenario. But how are your guys going?
Yeah, they've been incredible, and credit to them. We certainly knew that there'd be obstacles throughout the season, and we're prepared for them. And our attitude would be that, you know, as long as it was safe to play, and the community wasn't in danger, that would play and would move around the country. But probably with some of them, you need to give it to consideration what they went through over the last 12 months as well. Those imports in the United States that had their whole season taken away from them. So then to come here, quarantine for 2 weeks, practice for a couple of weeks, get ready for the first game of the season, doesn't happen. Go to Melbourne for a 4-game series, gets cut back to one. Yeah, you know, they've had a couple of setbacks, but you know, like we've seen with this group, you know, they've took it on the chin, they've smiled and said, "Oh, well, we go again." And then now we're ready to play Adelaide tomorrow night. That game starting off at 10 to 5 tomorrow evening.
Some mixed results on the way through so far?
A little bit. The opening game in Melbourne was just first-class pitching. He had a very, very high quality of game between two teams expected to go deep into the season. Won the first two games in Brisbane and then lost the third in a walk-off to the Giants. And probably that just hurt the boys going into a doubleheader that afternoon. So, we've seen plenty of things that we like with the team. We're confident that we can win our fair share of games in Adelaide and come home in those fixtures at Empire Ballpark and set up our season.
So what does that look like from a logistics point of view? Obviously, coming back from places that have had COVID, given you spent some time in Adelaide, does that get the guys out of doing too much quarantine when they get back? What's the situation?
Spot on. We'll spend the full 14 days in Adelaide now to avoid, a similar situation to the Wildcats where they're forced into a home quarantine. It's great they've been given the exemptions to be allowed to train over the next 2 weeks leading into the 24th at opening home game. But we'll stay the full 14 days in Adelaide, make sure we complete that that part of the process and come here on the Saturday, the 23rd, and be clear to play that night.
So the 23rd will be the first time back at Empire Ballpark. You've been pretty agile, haven't you, as a team, but also as a competition to be able to manoeuvre. The fact that you can go to Adelaide for 14 days and get out of the quarantine back here is a massive boost.
Yeah, and that's credit to the ABL and probably the owners of all the franchises who have been prepared to make changes on the run. Some teams have been prepared to alter fixtures and play a different set of games overnight. So when you've got a collective group of people that are willing to make something happen, it becomes a lot easier. The way that the schedule was structured, there was flexibility within that schedule, but it's probably coming to a stage now where the walls are narrowing a little bit and we don't have too many opportunities to make too many more changes to complete the season. So, I would certainly love the competition to be completed here in Perth and then to host the playoffs. And something we believe would be the best thing for the competition and something we're working to see if it's possible to achieve. The Heat have committed a lot to the ABL this season with 24 consecutive days on the road. So we're keen to host a large part of the back end of the season now.
So what's sort of the time frame you think of getting to the end of the season if you don't have any further alterations?
We've still got a couple of weeks to go. So we've got the completion of this week, then potentially another 2 to 3. So there's still the ability to add on another week at the end of the season, which is helping again in allowing teams to play out all their games. So we've just got to work through that between now and the end of the week, early next week, to complete a set of fixtures that sees out the season and also the playoff format as well.
It would be great if we could get the playoffs here in Perth. Steve, the team to Adelaide, I believe Warwick Saupold's heading across to join the team.
Yeah, so incredibly, Warwick's going to pitch tonight. He's actually just about to walk out onto the mound now. There's been all the state championships across the country were cancelled, so Baseball WA put together a showcase tournament here in Perth for the best under 16s and 18s. So Warwick's going to be pitching against these teenagers in a very short time, which would be a perfect end to his preparation before he flies out tomorrow morning to join up with the team in Adelaide. So a pretty cool experience for the batters that will get the chance to face someone who's played in the big leagues. And that's again the fabric of the Heat and some of our players who are willing to contribute to the next generation of players and help out in a bid to get themselves ready, but also give them the experience they need as well to become better baseballers moving forward.
Speaking about Perth Heat players that have made it in the big leagues, how about Liam Hendricks? That story yesterday, a huge deal to sign with the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, and one of the greats and so deserving as well for anyone that's followed his story or knows of Liam and his family, just such a wonderful character. So willing to give his time to future baseballers, to charity, but also to continue improving himself to become a better player. So we're delighted for him. We invited Liam back to the ballpark last summer when he was here, and what a gentleman! couldn't do enough for us. You know, really delighted for Liam and his family. Let's hope that not only is it a great deal commercially for him, but also puts a couple of championship rings on his finger. So he's had an incredible 36 months here in recent years in becoming one of the best relievers in the game. It's brilliant. It's wonderful to see and looking forward to him in the next 48 hours signing that contract and talking about what it's been like for him over the last few months.
Yeah, it's a great story. And as you said, yeah, he's a great person and has certainly given a lot back. Great to see a Perth boy doing so well overseas. Steve Nowkowski, thanks for giving us the update, mate. I'm sure we'll touch base again throughout the season and keep up to date as things unfold. Cheers for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season on now with match-winning deals.
And thanks very much for your company here on Sports Day this evening. Adam Papalia with you through to 8 o'clock. As I mentioned, Todd Johnston will be in the chair after 8 o'clock. Repeating the Sydney Sixers, I said they were going to be on target. Well, they have won over the Sydney Thunder tonight in the Big Bash in a rain-affected match. And just repeating the news earlier on that Adam Voges broke with us here on Sports Day, that Mitch Marsh, they hope, will be able to play again in the tournament, but he certainly won't be bowling as a bowler for the remainder of the BBL, but hopefully a short rehabilitation period, and he will be back in the team. He will travel with the side. He's got a moderate grade left side strain when he played against the Hurricanes yesterday. Let's get into some NBA chat now, and when we talk basketball, we talk to this man in Rob Beaver, who joins me now. G'day, Rob.
G'day, Pabs. Good to be with you.
Good to have you back in the chair after your break as well, and there's certainly plenty of NBA action going on. Lots to talk about, and I guess the biggest thing, we spoke earlier on about the Perth Heat negotiating the COVID issues that they've had here with juggling their schedule, but the situation's so much worse over in America and really affecting the NBA.
It certainly is. Now, the NBA Board of Governors, they had a meeting today on the back of basically ownership concerns around, it's not so much the players who are testing positive to COVID-19. There's only been, I say this relatively speaking, but a low number of players who have actually tested positive, lower than it was when they initially returned to training camp at the start of December. But the issues coming with player availability, because there is obviously contact tracing and those players are having to sit out precautionarily. That is what is postponing a lot of these games. The NBA rules are that you have to have 8 players available and suited up in order to start a game. A lot of teams haven't been able to get 8, even with the addition of rosters being expanded up to 15. And we've seen situations, Philadelphia, in fact, played a game in the last couple of days where they had 8 people dressed and ready to go. One of them was actually injured and would not have been able to play if the coach had said go on the court. So, look, it's taking a hold. The governors, of course, of their teams worried about A, injuries, but also B, what are we going to do if we need to stop the season? Are we going to lose the money that we've already lost? They had a meeting today. There's been tightening of strict protocols around COVID. Some of them make sense. I don't know why they weren't in place already. Things like preventing players from leaving their home or their hotel room unless it's for practice games or essentials like grocery shopping or doctor's appointments. Players can no longer have guests in their hotel rooms. We saw this with the AFL. I think it was colloquially known as the bonk ban. To put it pretty briefly, but I don't know why those things weren't in place to begin with. But this is the one that is interesting to me. Seating charts at games for those on the bench must match those that are on the team plane, i.e. so if one player gets it, then he's sitting next to the same people on the bench as he is on the team plane in an attempt to try and minimise that. And
that seems bizarre. I mean, if you're playing on a team, you're mixing it on the court together,
yep,
then they should just be treated as a collective, because well, that's not going to minimise it.
This is another one, limiting the amount of time they spend with one another, so that includes pre-game meetings. They can now go for no longer than 10 minutes. Any other meetings must be adhered to with social distancing, so 6 feet apart in what they're describing as large pre-approved NBA pre-approved rooms or spaces.
I reckon the players will be happy that meetings aren't going any longer.
Yeah, they'll be loving that. They'll be absolutely getting into it. But look, there's a lot of different things happening in there. It's in the grips. They did discuss, I believe, today the possibility of delaying it or postponing it for 2 weeks. At this stage, they're saying we'll fight through and hope these protocols fix things up.
All right, a bit more on-court action. LaMelo Ball, certainly someone that we've followed closely from his stint over here in the NBL, and he racked up a pretty impressive triple-double the other day.
He certainly did. He became the youngest player in NBA history to achieve that feat of a triple-double, 22 points, 12 rebounds, and 11 assists in a win over Atlanta. Coach James Borrego from the Charlotte Hornets, his quote, a 19-year-old rookie does not look like this, and this is something that we've all known about LaMelo Ball. The thing that's impressed me the most about this is his three-point percentage, and his shooting, it's up to about 35% this season, 24% when he was in the NBL. This, to me, not only shows the work that he's put in into his shot and the mechanics, but also his maturity when it comes to shot selection. He's hitting a higher percentage because simply he still takes the occasional questionable shot, but young players will do that. But generally speaking, he's making much better decisions with the ball. Now, he hasn't been starting. Terry Rozier and Devontae Graham have been starting for that team. I think you need to put him in that starting lineup now, despite the fact he's a rookie and you've got two highly paid point guards playing above him at the moment. You need to get him in the starting lineup.
James Harden, saw him speaking today, having a fair bit on the fact he had a failed trade out of the Rockets. How do I put this nicely? He's not looking in the most premium shape that he ever has.
No, round is a shape, so he is looking as premium as premium as ever been. Perhaps I want to just quickly play the comments James Harden made post-match.
We're just not good enough. Obviously, chemistry, talent-wise, just everything, and it was clear. I love this city. I literally have done everything that I can. I mean, this situation is crazy. You know, it's something that I don't think can be fixed, so... thanks.
He just walked out of his virtual post-match press conference after two questions. This is probably the closest he's gotten to being public about taking a swipe about the fact that he's still playing for the Houston Rockets. The owner there, Fertitta, his front office needs to do something. I guarantee they would have had a conversation with James when he requested a trade internally at the start of December saying, show up, play to the level we know you can play to. We will get the return we want. You'll be on your way. 6 weeks later, he's still playing there. He's been out of shape. He's missed games. He started the season in a blaze of glory. I think put up about 44 in the opening week. But he doesn't want to be there. And John Wall, who's been at the team for about 3 minutes since Russell Westbrook was traded, has already called him out in the post-match. So that locker room is in tatters.
It certainly is. We'll keep a close eye on him. Quick update on some of the Aussies.
Yeah, look, Ben Simmons, a slight knee injury appears to be bothering him. He has missed a little bit of time, but the 76ers playing great guns under new coach Doc Rivers. They had the best record in the league earlier in the week. Aaron Baines, he signed with the Toronto Raptors in the offseason. He hasn't lived up to that level to play for that contract. Only 5 points and 5 rebounds a game. He's even had a few coaches' decisions where he hasn't played. So taking that into account, not what he would have wanted. Patty Mills, it's Boomer's Patty Mills over at the San Antonio Spurs. 15 points a game and nearly a career-high 25 minutes a game. After a slow start to the season, the Spurs now 5-5. And Joe Ingles, of course, at the Utah Jazz, Mr. Consistent. They're 6-4, fourth in the Western Conference. He's not getting starters minutes as he ages, but still a really consistent player. Can hit threes, defend well, and very high basketball IQ, so doing really well.
One of those glue guys that you love to have on your roster to make you better. And Patty Mills certainly been exceptional. So I'm quoted today just about Cathy Freeman and the impact that Cathy Freeman had on him and the impact that he's had as an Indigenous person and as achieving at a really high level. We might try and play those comments tomorrow night on the show. Thanks very much, Rob.
No worries.
Rob Beaver there talking all things NBA basketball. Almost time for us to say goodbye. Back to wrap up the show in a moment, and then Todd Johnston will be in the chair after 8 o'clock with the night shift.